Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
From Bloomberg World Headquarters, I'm Charlie Pellett. Stocks are fluctuating. The Dow just turning negative again. It is down 6 points at 19,881. S&P 500 index up 2 points to 2271, up 0.1%. NASDAQ up 22 points, a gain of 0.4%. Gold up 210 the ounce to 1187, higher by 0.2%. Crude oil is down 2.2%. Down $1.18 a barrel, $50.78. Natural gas surging 5.6% to $3.28. Extremely volatile natural gas this year. Year to date, nat gas is down 12%. I'm Charlie Pellett. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash.
Thank you so much, Charlie Pellett. You are listening to Bloomberg Markets on this Tuesday. Carol Masser along with Corey Johnson. It is time for the Bloomberg ETF report brought to you by the ERP certification. Fuel your team's mastery of physical and financial energy markets with ERP certification, the only globally recognized designation for energy risk professionals. Learn more at garp.org/ERP. Let's listen to Bloomberg's Catherine Cowdery.
One of the biggest challenges for new ETF issuers is time. Bloomberg Intelligence analyst Eric Belchunas says ETFs generated about $6 billion worth of fees in 2016, and 90% of that went to products that were more than 5 years old. The reason? Liquidity. Belchunas offers this example.
You have a product like, say, EEM, which charges 69 basis points but trades $2 billion a day, versus IMG, same issuer, charges 15 or 16 basis points, but trades about an eighth of that. So there are some people who are picking IMG, but there are still a large group of the trading institutional world that doesn't care about the expense ratio. They just want that volume on EEM.
Belchunas says it takes about 5 to 10 years to generate the volume that attracts bigger investors, such as institutions. He adds the ETFs that generate the most revenue are not necessarily the ETFs that have the most assets. Instead, they trade the most. That's your Bloomberg ETF report. I'm Catherine Cowdery.
You're listening to Bloomberg Markets with Carol Masser and Corey Johnson on Bloomberg Radio.
Something tells me I'm into something good.
Something good for the markets in 2017. Jack Ablin, thinks so, Chief Investment Officer at BMO Private Bank, takes a look at a macro look at what's going to go on in the markets in the coming year. His crystal ball is out. He's ready. Jack Ablin, tell us what we're going to see that's so good in 2017.
I don't know if it's that great. Yeah, I think that investors certainly are expecting a lot out of the Trump administration. We've had this, 6 or 7% repricing based on lower taxes, regulatory rollback, a kinder view on coal. So I think that, that's starting to come through. We're seeing, for example, this morning, small business enthusiasm has really spiked, nearly the pre-crisis peak. We're very, very close to that on small business. I think that's encouraging. And analysts have ramped up their expectations. Corporate profits of S&P companies are expected to expand 13.5% in 2017. So there's a lot out there. Investors are expecting the best, and I hope they don't get disappointed.
I expect a lot. I have pretty high expectations, Jack, but it doesn't always come true. And I feel like we're in that phase of the game right now. We've heard a lot of stuff from the Trump team and certainly from Mr. Trump on the campaign trail. Now we have to see how much actually happens. And I guess we can expect some things to happen, maybe in terms of regulations, potentially in terms of taxes. How much of the stuff that everybody's been trading on, the enthusiasm, do you think ultimately does kind of pan out?
Well, I think the easier, if you look at the Trump platform versus the Ryan Republican platform and look for alignment, I guess the easy stuff would be taxes, certainly. Both sides are looking for simplifying and reducing personal income tax rates. That, of course, would come with a pullback on deductions. They're also looking at lower corporate taxes. I think Trump is looking at something like 15, and Ryan is looking for something more like 20, but still, there, I think they're in agreement there. And, you know, there is some controversy with this border adjustability tax. Not sure if it's legal through the lens of the World Trade Organization, but if it does move forward, that has the potential of creating some real winners and losers in corporate America. We could see companies like Walmart see their taxes nearly double. Companies like Deere and Caterpillar, who you know, export quite a bit, could actually walk away with a net tax credit. So I think that still, you know, needs to be resolved. But I think your point is that as investors start to see this sausage being made, we'll have to see if maybe some of them, you know, pull back from some of this enthusiasm that we're seeing right now.
If I may follow up, though, in terms of getting more out of the economy and economic growth picking out, we have to have productivity gains, right? And so unless we get productivity gains, you know, it might, you know, companies might do buybacks and they might have lower taxes and stuff. Do we get the productivity gains that you see will lead to potentially more economic growth? And
well,
that just boosts everything.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, the fact is the economy is constrained by labor force growth, which is right now 0.7, and productivity, which is running at around 1.5. So we're looking at roughly a 2% growth rate. And right now, you know, President Trump has promised to beat this 2% donkey into a 4% racehorse. And one way to ramp up labor force growth really quickly is immigration. Well, that seems to be off the table, so let's not even go down that path. The other way would have to be productivity. And governments don't create productivity. What governments can do is create a petri dish in which productivity can flourish. And there are really three ingredients there. There's high-quality labor, there's cheap capital, and no regulations or very low regulations. And I think that formula is working. Perhaps, you know, quality of our labor force may be not perfectly in alignment with what the private sector is looking for, but for the most part, I think we're in good shape there. But we can't expect productivity gains in 2017, or at least not a big ramp up. You know, that's a longer term investment. The funny thing is, and this is the remarkable thing, all of these buybacks that we're seeing because of this cheap money, largely from the European Central Bank and U.S. companies issuing in Europe, translating their money back here and then buying back their shares, is really a plug figure. The fact is that money should have gone into corporate investment, business spending, research and development, the kinds of stuff that would lead to productivity. So if that does start to channel toward those pursuits, guess what happens? Shareholders end up with fewer dollars in their pocket, and it could actually be a near-term negative for stocks as what could be a longer-term positive for the economy down the line.
I love that. Beat a 2% donkey into a 4% racehorse. Now, and to be clear, you're talking about GDP there, right?
That is correct.
That's just spectacular.
But although I bet on 2% donkeys.
Yeah, and what usually happens to those?
It doesn't work out.
It's like taking a no-name shoe and making it a Jimmy Choo. It just isn't so easy. Just saying.
You're not going to hear me using that metaphor.
I bet I won't.
I'm not sure. That doesn't compute with me.
Will repatriation help that happen in 2017?
I think it could. You know, I think if you look at, for example, countries like Ireland or Hong Kong, where they've got a 10% corporate tax rate, it's not a surprise that foreign direct investment as a percentage of GDP in those countries is near a worldwide high. So I think if we were to lower the corporate tax rate, level the playing field, try to get some of this capital back here at home, that could help. But, you know, keep in mind, George W. Bush had a program, a program to repatriate capital. I think it was called the Jobs Creation Act. The capital came back, but the jobs weren't created. So,
right.
It really has to be, create an environment where this investment will be rewarded.
What worries you about the next 12 months?
Well, I think it is this. To me, it's just reality versus expectation. So, you know, under a 12-month time horizon, the market is simply a reaction of the intersection of reality and expectations. And, you know, investor expectations are pretty high right now. We're still taking this, you know, fabulous, fantastic, marvelous approach to policy. You know, and at some point, you know, this administration is going to have to get some things done. So, you know, we'll see. I think, you know, that worries me a little bit. The other is valuation. You know, if you look forward-looking and with high expectations, markets don't seem that expensive. You look back and look at price-to-sales, for example, we're trading at 2x revenues. We haven't seen the market trade at 2x the revenue since the tech bubble. And, you know, that didn't end well at that valuation level. So I think, you know, I'm trying to temper my view. I think that I'm willing to give the administration the benefit of the doubt. I think that maybe corporate profits will start to ramp up. But, you know, the expectations nonetheless are pretty high.
Hey, Jack Ablin, thank you. Chief Investment Officer over at BMO Private Bank on the phone in Chicago. This is Bloomberg.